Welcome to the Deep Sexy Play podcast. I'm your host, EJ Love, and this is my uncensored space designed to stimulate your mind and give you full permission to explore your curiosities and express your deepest sexual desires. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's get turned on. So welcome to another episode of the podcast, and this is going to be a very insightful episode as we are talking about somatic healing through kink. And I'm here with Anna Morrigan, who I run the Conscious Sexuality Experience training with. We do that here in Australia, and we're also in the process of creating an online version. And so Anna actually was very excited to be talking about this. It's her idea to do this episode. And I think that one of the things is that what people don't realize or are surprised is to hear that kink can really be deeply healing. So Anna, I'd love you to start by speaking to that point.
Yeah, okay, there's so many stereotypes about kink. And a lot of people are really surprised because they have this picture about it being about masochism and sadism and pain and all those kind of things. And sometimes it is. But I'm really interested in more conscious kink and conscious healing. Well, we basically recognize that kink is just another way of moving energy through the body. So of all the different ways we can move energy through the body, kink is another one of them. And as we know, trauma is stored inside our body, so we need to move that through, and this is another way of doing that. I always think it's really good to point out, though, that kink is therapeutic, but it's not a therapy. So if you're looking at exploring some trauma, some problems through kink, you should always do that in conjunction with a proper therapist. And I'm really excited to say that there are now a number of therapists who are really starting to understand that how kink and BDSM can be incredibly healing.
That's amazing. Yeah, I really love that. And I've heard some really great stories of healing through kink, and I actually have my own personal story that I'd love to share. And this was many years ago. I'd come out of a very abusive relationship, and I actually, the way that I left that relationship was by booking myself into a tantra / BDSM retreat, because I needed to get away. I needed to be around community. I needed to be around people. I needed to not be isolated. I needed that safety and holding to help me move on and not go back to that relationship. And it was a bit of a deep dive to throw myself into that. And one of the things that had happened in that relationship is that, and I'll just give a trigger warning, because this may, what I'm about to share is about an abusive experience. And so it may have may bring up some emotions for some people, and my encouragement is if that happens, is just to regulate yourself, take some deep breaths, notice the sensations in your body. So what happened in that relationship was that one of the things that would happen is when we were in a physical abusive dynamic is that he would rip the necklaces off my neck. And I think I went through about 5 or 6 necklaces. And then often he would put his hands around my neck, and I would go into a freeze response and shut down. My body would shut down. And a lot of fear. I experienced a lot of fear. So what was really interesting is that in this retreat, I was put into this. There was an exercise where we had to be led around the room. And so one person was the dominant and one person was the submissive. And it was a very gentle practice. And we were taught to, you know, use breath and tune into our bodies. And so, you know, it was more of a somatic experience. And so as this woman, so I was paired with this beautiful woman, and she was there was this big pile of pillows in the room, like cushions and pillows, very soft. And she ended up she blindfolded me, and then she was walking me around. Then she lay me down on the pillows. Now, I had recently bought a new necklace, and it was like a necklace that I was reclaiming. I was like, this is my necklace. Now that I've left this relationship, this necklace gets to stay. Like, basically, it's not going to be broken. And what happened is that she actually, at one point, she lay me down on this big pile of cushions, and she actually went to my necklace, and she took her hand and she actually picked up the pendant with her necklace. And she had no idea that I'd had these abusive experiences. Then she picked it up, and as it was like she was pulling on it. But then what she did is she gently placed it back down onto my chest. And in that moment, it was like such a healing experience. Like, I got a new imprint of safety. Like, oh, it was like a relief in my system. Like, oh, I'm safe. I'm safe to be touched here. My necklace is safe. My neck is safe. I'm not going to have this ripped away from me. And the gentleness that she did it with was so deeply healing for me. And I just remember feeling that safety in my body as she did this. It was so profound, and it wasn't painful. It wasn't, there was no like spanking or whipping or like anything like that that could, it was just so soft and beautiful. But we were in that dynamic of dog, and I was just fully trusting her and being led by her, and fully in, she was in the dominant, I was submissive, and I was like fully trusting her to keep me safe. And it was beautiful because I shared that with her after, and I felt like she was just being very intuitive. And I hadn't actually made a request for that healing, but I imagine that this is some of the things that we can do, set intentions for when we might have had these experiences, that we can be like, okay, I want to create safety around this. So I just wanted to share that, of how profound that was for me. And it's interesting because now I actually get very turned on when someone touches my neck. I'm like, I love it when my neck is grabbed, someone, plays with my neck. I'm like, oh my God, it's so hot and it's so turned on. And I kind of reflect, I'm like, this should be like I've shielded myself. I'm like, oh, I should not want people to touch me. I should not want those things because, the trauma I've experienced. But it's just like amazing of how powerful that was. And I feel like it was so deeply healing for me.
EJ, you've covered so many elements in there. Such a beautiful story. Like, first of all, the safety, that so much can come up through our body when we feel safe. The other thing that I really love that you've highlighted in that particular dynamic, so there was still a power dynamic. You still had a dominant person and a submissive person, but there was no exchange of pain. There was an exchange of energy, but there was an exchange of pain. Of energy, but not pain. And that's so common for a lot of BDSM kink dynamics. I do a lot of work with people who are on the other side of the world. So we do it by Zoom. So we are really talking about dynamics and energy without necessarily being pain being involved. That doesn't mean it can't be involved. And for some people, that's really, really healing. So for some people who perhaps have trauma that is stuck in their body, they actually may identify that they need pain to move that through. So sometimes that does happen, but a lot of the time it doesn't, and it's not required. So I really love how you've, added that in. And I would say the most important thing there was that you felt safe. You felt safe to release, you felt safe to let go, and then the trauma almost bubbles up. And then that gets to be healed. So a lot of people come to do BDSM work. And the way I work is I always require people to set an intention beforehand. So there's all sorts of different ways you can play with kink and BDSM. You can go to parties and sometimes it's just fun. But if you're looking at a therapeutic session, then I always ask people to identify an intention. So what is it there? What are they, is it they want to work with? So they might want to work with a fear, or a particular trauma, or they might want to work with a shadow, or they might want to. So we identify, first of all, what it is they want to work in, and then we spend some time identifying where they might feel that in the body. And then that's where we start. And then we start prodding around at that little trauma. So a really common one that I see a lot is a lot of men actually have a fear of being humiliated by a woman. It's a very big fear that a lot of men have. So in a kink scenario, we might actually create a intention that they want to work with that, and we would humiliate them a little bit till they got a response in their body. Then we would move that through their body. Then we would bring them back to safety. Then we would do that again, and we would do it very, very gently over time through a process called we call pendulation, which is they come in and out of that particular feeling. And over time, we increase what we call their window of tolerance to that particular feeling. So while we're doing that, they may go through some of the responses that people go through to trauma. So they may go into a freeze. And if we see that happen, we gently bring them back to safety. Or if we see them going into a fear response, we gently bring them back to safety. And often that can happen over a number of appointments. It's a very, very gentle, caring, loving process. Very different to what I guess what people, a lot of people think it is. Basically, what a dom or a dominatrix in my case is, they're almost like a, they're like a magician and a drama creator. So they put together role plays. They put together stories that help people work through their traumas. And sometimes people might actually want to act out something really horrible that's happened to them and add back things that were missing. Most of all, their ability to make it stop, their ability to have power in a situation where once upon a time they were powerless, and to bring back an ending that ends in them feeling loved and cared for. So I guess that's sort of the healing nature of it. And a lot of that is also very regulating on people's nervous systems. Also, one of the really cool things about kink is it's also fun. So, EJ, it's play. And we know that play is part of your nervous system. I think there's been seven main components of play that work on your central nervous system, and every one of them is actually present in BDSM and kink work. I mean, they call it play for a reason. Play is very soothing on people's nervous systems. One of the other really beautiful things that I love about kink is usually someone who works in a dom position has done a lot of personal work around being their authentic selves. So they've really come to accept a part of them that may have been hid in the shadows. And then they get to help other people do that as well. And for many of my customers, that's the very first time they've been seen as their authentic self, and that's been loved and treasured and cared for. Or it's the first time they've been able to name a desire that they may have some guilt and shame around, and someone say to them, "That's okay, we can love that." That in itself can be incredibly healing.
Oh, so many good things that I'm like, oh, I want to respond to that. Oh, that's good. And what I will speak to in response to what you shared is the play piece. I think I love that. And I love the magician and the, you know, the drama teacher. The definitely two archetypes I really resonate with. And when we do this at the Conscious Sexuality Experience, we really do bring that element of play in our training, and you know, getting people in their dom energy and exploring different archetypes. And I love that, and exploring how can we bring these archetypes to our sessions. So, and then bringing in the nervous system regulation as a part of that, which I think is really essential. And I love that you spoke to the pieces about the freeze and perhaps getting feeling a bit anxious in a session, how important it is to be able to resource and support our clients to be regulated rather than taking them deeper. This is something we speak to a lot in the training, is like knowing when the client is starting to, or your partner or the person that you're exploring this intimacy with, is starting to go out, is starting to get dysregulated and go out of the window of tolerance, so we don't re-traumatize them. And I think, there's so many, this is edgy work, like there are, we are taking people to the edges, and that's where a lot of the fun can be, right? And it's knowing where that zone is, that we don't take people into the trauma zone, and we're keeping them in that growth zone. So also what I loved is that when you said, I can't remember exactly what it was, but what it was about was like feeling really regulated and safe. And it was like in that moment when that woman part, it was actually a, I think I've still got it actually, it was a purple heart pendant. And when she placed it back on my body, my whole body just went, ah, and my whole body just fully relaxed and opened. My arms were open, my body was open, and I just melted into this pillow, this big cushion of mountain of pillows. And I was like, oh, it was like I was in a cloud. It was just so perfect. I feel like the universe just found a way to make that happen for me. It was beautiful. And then also at that same retreat, I had explored going into the energy of the abuser as well, like going into, I had an agreement, myself and another woman I was paired with who loved pain. We had an, she's like, I like we had an agreement that I was now going to be the dom, and I was now going to become the abuser, like the in it, go into the energy and do things that my ex partner had done similarly, and she had full consent for that as a way of reclaiming my power, as a way of role playing. This is like, this is me actually taking my power back. That was really intensive. I think looking back, I actually found the first one with the softness and the was much more healing for me. And I probably, looking back, I think going into the being the role playing the abuser was probably a little bit too intense for my system at the time. But I can see how when that is really done with, so much resourcing and that I feel like I probably took myself too far with that to when I look back. But now knowing what I know now and having the resources that I have, I could definitely do that and do it in a way that is could essentially be really profound and I don't feel like I need to do it, but I can definitely see that it could be done really beautifully.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. One of the other things, and it speaks to a lot, EJ, to what we do in the training. A lot, I know we discuss in the training that the damage that the patriarchal system we live in at the moment has done to men. And one of the wonderful things, and my experience is working as a female dominatrix, is that so many men have lost a space where they can actually be cared for in the short term by a strong woman and be completely raw and vulnerable. So we've talked before about how men used to go to temples and they could be raw and vulnerable and loved. Well, we don't really have those spaces in our society anymore. A lot of men don't want to be what they perceive or society perceives as weak or vulnerable with their partners or whatever. So there's a real deep part of them that just wants to come and be dominated and then cared for by a woman so they can really drop those patriarchal roles of being strong and responsible, and they can just let them go and just really relax into, the real healing strength of the feminine. And that's something I find really beautiful. Men just, find it very healing to be in energy. And they put that role they wear out in the streets down for a little while. Ooh, and they just get to be. And I think a lot of men also find that incredibly healing.
Yeah, well, you hear a lot about, I guess, well, I've heard a lot about how, these big CEO bosses, they'll go see a dominatrix because that's their only time where they don't have to think, they don't have to make decisions, they just get to fully relax and submit and surrender and not have to be on, essentially. And I think we really are in a world where men do feel like they have to be on all the time and they have to be providing and doing stuff and keeping them, self busy with work and whatever it is, and so I can get how. I mean, even I'm in discussions at the moment of hiring a dom myself, a male dom, because I'm a businesswoman that like keeps myself pretty busy, and I'm like, yes, I want to hire a professional that can completely just take care of me and serve me and I have some intentions around some healing, around trust that I want to explore, like really trusting the masculine. Recently been through a breakup where there was a breach of trust, and like I'm like, right, I want to explore different ways of this trust and allowing myself to be have an imprint of a safe, healthy masculine that I can fully let go and trust. And that would be one of my intentions behind doing that as well, and leaning into some edges.
I find too a lot of men just want an experience where they can cry. I have a couple of customers who often their intention is, I want to cry. And we'll write a little story about something that's going to make them cry. But usually they just want to start crying so they can almost have that cathartic effect so that they can keep crying and keep releasing maybe a lot of grief that's been stored up. And often once for them it starts, it keeps flowing, and they can move a lot of grief from things that may have happened a really long time ago, in that safe space. And also need to mention, I guess, that one of the really important parts is the aftercare that comes afterwards. So the aftercare is the piece that holds it all together. So no matter what happens at the end, there is always a very deep piece of loving connection, aftercare, softness, safety. And that's always dictated by the sub in whatever way it is that feels comforting for them. So they really get that really deep nourishment afterwards, which is kind of like it's like the bow at the end of the present. That's what holds it all together. So that's a really important part of it.
Yeah, I feel like that is absolutely essential. Yeah, absolutely essential. And yeah, I'd love to actually, as you were talking, like I've had many experiences with the men and that crying, and I think that's a really beautiful piece to mention, because there aren't a lot of spaces where men do feel safe that they can cry. And so what a beautiful offering to create and hold that space. It's something that we do teach in our training is being able to hold space for men to just really feel all the things they need to feel and coming with that beautiful love and holding energy. And I've had times where I've held an energy of like a divine mother energy where this like a man's just in his little boy like bawling his eyes out and grieving, and it's never it's the first time in his life that he's experiencing that. So, it's really, really powerful stuff. And I think this is really speaking to a lot of people think about kink and it's all just pain and but really there's so much more, there's so much.
So much to it. The human condition, we're so complex. And we're, embodied movement might work for some people, for other people, this is what works for them. And EJ, it's really popular. Like, there's a lot of people that are experimenting with kink. So
There
it's
are,
still.
yes. I mean, I have to say, for a while there, when I used to think about kink, I used to just think about, BDSM and whips and chains and things. And now, after exploring it, I'm like, wow, like, this is actually profound. This is so profound. And I'm like, oh, I'm a kinky bitch. I'm actually really kinky. And I guess really anything that's not vanilla is deemed as kinky, and I've really probably been kinky my whole life.
And the definition of kink would very much changes over, space and time. What people might have thought was kinky 400 years ago, we would probably think was really normal now, or maybe the other way around. But yeah, kink is pretty much anything that's not in the definition of what we call vanilla or just normal. Oh, normal's not a good word either. But yeah, it's just outside the social construct of what we call normal is kink. So there's lists and lists of what different kink acts, and most people read them and think, oh, I didn't know that was a kink. Oh, geez, maybe I am kinky. I didn't know that was a kink. So I think most people have some kinky thoughts or kinky desires. A lot of people may have pushed them down and haven't had an opportunity where they can think about them and feel good about them, but I think it would be, it's very common.
Yeah, it is. It is. I would love to hear about using like kink somatically to move energy through the body, and yeah, that bringing our focus to the felt sense inside the body.
Okay, well, I guess both when once we're talking about any sort of kink that touches the body, so I guess the classic one everyone always thinks about whipping and cropping, but there's also ropes, there's also sensual things. So kink can be feathers and anything that brings the attention away from the mind where the busyness is and back into that body so we can really experience being in the body. Now that's different for everyone. And some people do require quite some heavy, thuddy whipping to really get inside their bodies. That's just them. Some people don't require much at all. But there's a real solidness to BDSM and kink. It is very involved most of the time in touch and sensory. It uses all your five senses. So, well, I definitely in my practices encourage people to make sure they're using all five senses at all times, which really keeps them inside their body. And another really important part of a conscious kink session is breath. So at all times, you're bringing your customer back to their breath, back to their body, back to keeping themselves within their body and that bodily experience. And then we encourage the movement of energy through the body. And that can usually be done either with, well, if you're using objects or whips or crops, that's fine, but you can do that with your hand and you can actually physically move that energy through someone's body and then invite them to breathe it up. Spread it around their body so it's moving and basically becoming unstuck.
Oh, yeah, I love that. I feel, how powerful that is. And it's making me reflect on my experiences, like my kinky experiences, where I have not had that somatic experience, where it has just been, oh, we're exploring with these tools. We're going to try like a flogger, and we're going to try a spreader bar, and we're going to, oh, let's see what this works. Let's try it out. And there's no real sense of like, being in the body, there's no real sense of presence, and I feel the difference. It feels really disjointed and disconnected, and like we're just doing something. We're just doing something. It's like a almost like a performance to some degree. Like there's a doing. Whereas when I have experienced it more embodied, which one of my most favorite times, which I will do another podcast episode on this, is when I actually was doing a role play scenario as a queen, and I had four servants. And we did breath and we did movement and we did to prepare us, and I was getting to breathe and I was breathing and I was really tuning in when I needed to stop for a moment, when I needed to take a breath, when, oh, I'm noticing my body and this is, I need something a bit different, like I'm feeling into what is my body actually saying right now, what am I actually feeling right now, rather than being often in the past being a fawner. It would be more about like, oh, like how can I, does this person want to do this? Like, oh, like what would they want? Like all these things. And this actually, this role play scenario was more, it was a reclaiming of that as well. So I was not having to do anything for them. They were being in service to me as my servants. And it was a part of my really reclaiming my power around asking for what I want and being able to be heard and being able to feel safe when I asked for what I wanted or said no, that was respected and honored. And for me, like I just looking back, that was probably one of the most memorable sexual experiences that I've ever had because of that level of presence and embodiment and to really be able to listen to my body and then feeling the pleasure open when I created that amount of safety and feeling my body then opening to the pleasure from that beautiful foundation of safety. And then I could really surrender so much more easily rather than when I haven't been that present, when it has been just not so somatic that it is felt that pleasure of has been more friction based. Oh, I'm going to do this thing to my body, or someone's going to do this thing to my body to make create friction to create pleasure. Rather than going in more feeling into the body and listening to what the body wants, and oh, now my body's feeling this, and I'm going to ask for this, and then the pleasure just rising from within rather than the external friction-based pleasure experience. And I think that's the real, I'm only really debriefing this now. I hadn't like, and when you shared all of that, I'm like, oh yeah, I can really see these experiences are so different, and my the. When I reflect on I'm thinking about two specific experiences. I'm thinking about the queen worship experience and the kind of other experience that I actually had with an ex-partner. When I think about the queen worship, I'm like, oh my God, that was profound. That was deep. That was wow. Other experience, I'm like, oh, that was awkward. That was messy. That was like, oh, can't figure it out. Like, so like I could feel like it was in my head. I was actually feel like I was disassociated, to be honest, to some degree. And just trying to figure out what thing's going to work to bring me more pleasure. What thing is going to, instead of actually listening to what is the felt sense in the body and speaking from that place.
And something look, it's really important to me. If I'm going to do anything with someone else, I do a lot of preparation, like maybe and even a couple of hours of talking about it, getting so people relaxed, comfortable within their body, breathing into their body. So it's like a dance experience. You can't just walk in and know what to do. It's awkward. There's a dynamic and an ease that you need with breathing together, being comfortable together before you go into exploring with some more difficult dynamics. And there's a lot of communication that needs to happen along the way, on two ways. The dom and the sub have to be quite tuned with each other. And the dom needs to be watching all the time that person's body, their body language for any sign of everything not being quite as it should be, and stopping and pausing and communicating whenever they pick up, because someone in a sub position cannot always tell you that they're not okay. They might not even know they're okay, but there's slight changes in the body, subtle changes in the body where you know it's time to check in, it's time to check they're okay. And to be able to have that dynamic with someone, you do need some preparation time. You need a bit of a talk beforehand. You need to be aware of what might come up for someone. And yeah, that takes a little bit of time. That's probably not something you can achieve by just whipping out a whip and getting started. So that communication is really important. Something we haven't talked about too is also how healing and wonderful kink is for the person in the dominating role. They too have a role to play. And for them too, it is an incredibly healing situation to be able to be a strong, dominant person who may yell and swear or be really sexy and really slutty and all those dark energies that a lot of us have been told to push down, that bad bitch comes out. And even better, someone is paying for her. Someone actually thinks that that side of you is so beautiful that they're prepared to pay for it. That is a really empowering feeling. And even for women who don't actually want to be a dominatrix, exploring that energy within yourself, taking it to the bedroom, the boardroom, to work in your relationships, and having that ability to bring out that energy and just dom yourself when you need it is a really healing and fantastic experience. So it's not just wonderful for the sub, it's also incredibly healing for the person who's in a dominating role.
I love this because I am that's what I experienced when I was in that queen, like that dominatrix role, and I was like, fuck yes, this is amazing. And it excited me to explore more of that and to, and to bring out parts of myself that had been shut down. Like you talk about the bad bitch energy. Like that for me is an edge because I was a good girl. I've been conditioned to be a good girl. So to create scenarios and scenes with a willing submissive who wants to be in that role, where I get to bring out the bad bitch. I mean, this is something that I have an intention to explore. I've done a little bit of it. Is just I can feel and taste the liberation in that. I'm like, yes. And it feels like this is like that. I mean, this is shadow work, right? Where we're bringing out, or rather
Totally.
shadow work, where we're bringing out these parts that have been repressed to liberate and be the medicine for the those other parts. So that bad bitch being the medicine for the good girl, and just being able to fully go there and be free in that expression. So I have done this, as you know, we were recently in a training that I was running, and we did a shadow circle where people got to embody a shadow and really ham it up and express that. And I was the seductress, the shadow seductress that was really manipulative and taking energy. Oh yeah. And I was like, oh my God, she's amazing. Like, I'm not gonna go out and do that in real life. It's not like, but it's like embodying that and feeling it in the body. And letting myself be witnessed in it and be loved in it, like that was really, really liberating. And that these are the kind of things that we can do to explore this. And also something else that came up was and that Anna and I have been talking about is you talked about the exploring the dominatrix energy, and you said something about, was it money, or you said something about business? Oh, dominating yourself. That's right. Yes, dominating yourself. Yeah, so it reminded me, we've had discussions recently about running a retreat for women that are in leadership positions to explore this stuff, to explore their sexuality and have greater freedom of expression. And we've spoken about that piece around really dominating yourself. Yeah, and I love that. And it's so funny, I did actually did a so keep an eye out for that, or send us a message on Instagram, and we'll put the show notes below if you are a woman in leadership position and you are interested in doing a coming on a luxury weekend retreat, and exploring all these things, then send us a message and we'll make sure you get some information and get notified. And the other thing is that I actually recently did a I was on an online workshop, and it was a slut embodiment workshop. And when we got to doing this visioning process where I got to vision my slut was a dominatrix. And part of my slut was like, oh, like being in, like has this like desire. My slut has this desire of like, oh, I really want to be free of my slutty energy. And I'm also deeply terrified of it, of being like fully seen. And then, oh, I want to explore this with a man and let him fully see me. And my dom, my slut that came as a dom, was like, basically, no, this energy is not for a man. It's for you. Take this pleasure for you. It's all for you. So I was like, okay, I see. Like, and that was dominating myself because so much of my life has been about men's pleasure. It has been about being in service to men's pleasure. And it was just like, no, this is for you first. For you, your pleasure is for you first. Go on this journey with your slut. For yourself first, and then when it is more integrated and it's more embodied, it's then there's going to be much more freedom around being witnessed in it and being seen in it. So it's like that's and it's interesting because I've been in some conversations around slut degradation and was maybe going to meet up with this man, but then it didn't work out. I was like, okay, now I see why. Like, this is for me. This is for me first. Like, and this is my inner dom is like, no, your slut's for you. Like, this is what you need to do. So that's the journey that I'm on right now.
And EJ, don't argue with the Dom.
Yeah,
Don't argue. You just need to do what you're told on that one. That was one of our greatest joys, I think. In on I know there was many great joys in our last CSE training, but when we watched some of those women that did the training with find their inner Dom, I think there was some surprises on some women who are a little bit hesitant to step into that energy, but oh my goodness, when they did, it was spectacular.
Yeah, I love that. And I love witnessing everyone's different expression of their Dom. And I feel like there's so many different flavors of the Dom. I've seen, I think, the when I demonstrated that, I was very much in like my Queen Dom on the throne, ordering things around. Now I think the next training, I'm going to be in my bad bitch Dom.
Yeah. You could be in your slutty seductress too.
I
Like,
will just do it all.
yeah, okay, let's just do it.
Yeah, and then maybe I can bend you over my knee again like last time.
There's another edge.
We did a demonstration and Anna kindly offered to let me dom her, which was have me dom her, which was a big edge, and yeah, it was great.
I do believe in the interests of education, and I admire my commitment. I actually let everyone have a go at domming me, which was a really big edge. And you will have to come along to our training to see that because it's not happening anywhere else ever.
Yeah, that's pretty special. That's like special privileges. I'd love you touched on pendulation before. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and like also like working on triggers through pendulation?
Pendulation. So pendulation is basically taking someone gently into either a trauma or a fear or something they want to work on and letting them experience the feelings and emotions around that until they're not comfortable or until they've met an edge with experiencing that. And then you would bring them back out. So you would stop whatever you were doing very gently. You'd have a talk to them and a bit of a debrief, and you might leave it there. Or you might go back in, do it for a little bit longer. And what you're basically doing is increasing the window of tolerance. So, for something that someone has identified has been an edge or a trigger or a fear for them in the past, you're putting them into it very gently. In a very safe, controlled experience, of which they have all the verbal and hand tools to make it stop at every moment. And you've done everything surrounding them to make them feel safe. And you very gently, over time, increase the amount of time that they sit in that uncomfortable feeling, whatever it is. And you're moving the energy through their body at the same time. And in that way, people are able to work through some of the fears and traumas that have been holding them back. And basically, what we can do with that, a lot of people go into reactions from traumas so quickly that the responses happened even before they know the trauma has happened. But by doing that gently, we're giving people time to be able to identify when they go into a trauma. Be able to be familiar about what that feels like. So, a lot of people don't know when they're heading into a trauma reaction. They don't know when they're going into freeze or fawn. So, it gives people the power to understand what those feelings feel like inside their body. And that gives them a lot more power over whatever's going on for them because they understand it and then they have the tools to resource and work upon it.
Yeah, so really giving great self-awareness and embodied awareness to those experiences. So when they are in an experience in another time in their own personal lives, they're like, oh, hang on, I notice I'm going into freeze. Hang on, I'm going into flight. Or I'm becoming disembodied and I actually need to stop. I think, yeah, it's so important. I actually feel like this needs to really be foundational to having, I mean, this is part of our foundational teachings in our training. But I really feel like, imagine if everyone knew this, who was exploring their sexuality or anyone who's having sex, just knew what was going on in their bodies. And so, you know, there would be a lot that would be prevented and a lot more pleasure that would be open to.
Totally. And I guess on board with that, we give people resourcing tools. So we teach them, okay, if you feel like you're getting disassociated or you're going into more a dorsal response or a freeze response, or we teach them skills to get themselves back to regulation. So in taking someone into a dysregulated experience very gently, we can very gently give them the skills so that if that happens some other time, they actually know how to ground themselves and bring themselves back. And I give people homework to go home and practice regulating themselves, practice breathing, practice using their senses, practice just socially communicating with other people. And no one leaves a session with me without a list of do they do when they get home? What do they do if these feelings come up? Who are they going to see? Who are they going to talk to? So resourcing people so if stuff comes up when they're not with you is a really important part of the process.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I used to, like, when I was doing my tantra sessions, also would give them homework because it'd be like, you can't just rely on coming to me to do this. Like, this is important to be practicing at home and having your own conscious self-pleasure practices and things like that that would support their journey of healing and opening to pleasure. So I have a really interesting question. And I love to hear your thoughts because it's about fantasies and like knowing what fantasies are real and what are actually trauma-based intrusive thoughts.
Oh, that's such a good question. It's something that people come to me a lot, and they're really concerned about fantasy that keeps popping up for them. And sometimes it might be quite disturbing. It's something that they don't feel comfortable with. It's not in within their self-perception of themselves about something they should be fantasizing about. So sometimes what we do is we actually act out that fantasy. And sometimes someone will say, oh, I don't like that at all. Gee, I remember something else happening to me in the past, and that thought is about that. So that's more an intrusive thought. That's a thought that just keeps popping into someone's consciousness, but it's not so much a fantasy. But another time, someone, this thought keeps popping me up, and we might try it, and they're, oh, that was really good. I really enjoyed that. So it helps, gives people an arena where they can play out some of their fantasies and see which ones are real, which ones might be an intrusive thought from former popping up, or which are some things that should evermore remain a fantasy that stays in your head and doesn't get to get acted out. Because people often have fantasies that they're really hot to think about. They don't actually want to do them. So this is an arena to practice that, to actually work out in a safe environment which ones are something that you might like to do, which ones are something that, oh, actually, when I went to do that, I actually went it straight into a trauma trigger. So maybe that wasn't a fantasy. Maybe I need to work on that a little bit. Or okay, now I've actually gone to play that out and I realized that was just something in my head and I don't enjoy that at all. So it's just a safe arena for people to play with their fantasies, to just see where they fit. I think it's really important to point out, though, when something comes up and is trauma triggering someone and they identify that, it's really important to make sure they are working with a trauma therapist as well. So BDSM is a great thing to help people work somatically do things, but it also needs to be done in conjunction with someone who's specialized in that area.
Yes, agreed. 100%. But people that especially have had sexual trauma
Totally.
to be working with a trauma therapist. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes in BDSM that does come up and it's never come up for that person before. This is a something that has, well, it's been on the edge of their consciousness and then come into, and there is some remembering. And that is usually when you would very gently, with love and affection, end a session. You would put that person in a very safe situation, and then you would resource them and help them to find professional help to work through that.
Great. Yes, I think that's really important to speak to, because I think sometimes, particularly as practitioners, and I know even when I was working in the, doing as a tantra practitioner, there was stuff that I just couldn't handle. Like I knew that was out of my capacity, and knowing that, okay, this is outside of my capacity, I'm going to refer them to someone that is a trauma therapist, and not feel like we have to, not feel like it's on us, and all that we have to be responsible, or not try to do something that we don't actually know that we can do. I think that's a
Correct.
big piece, because I think there was definitely times that I can reflect and look back. I was like, okay, well, I can see if I can work with this, but really, I probably didn't have necessarily the ability or capacity. It would have been the time, and it was pretty early on, just not knowing really what was appropriate. And now I think then with the more there's a lot more trauma awareness these days. I mean, I'm going back like 10 years, right? So it's a lot more trauma awareness these days. And there you see on Instagram, there's so much about, maybe it's just my news feed, but about trauma awareness and trauma informed and somatics and nervous system regulation. It's becoming very well known, which I think is great. And it is also important to identify that, being trauma informed does not mean that we heal trauma. That's what a trauma therapist does, and so
Correct.
it's up to them to us to send them to people that are certified, qualified trauma therapists that can support things that are outside of our capacity.
Correct. It's really, really important. And I agree with you that awareness is growing, although that could be my news feed as well. But I am surprised when I'm out talking to friends and stuff, how many people still don't really understand what a trauma response is. And I am surprised with customers and clientele looking for BDSM, how many people just come in and say, oh, I just want to be hit or hurt, but I'm not really sure why. I don't really know why I want that. I just want that, which in my opinion usually requires a little bit more exploration. Just to see what we're working with.
Yeah, 100%. Great. Oh my God, there's so much more we could talk about, and I'm feeling like bringing this podcast to a close. But I know we're going to talk more about this stuff. We're going to talk more about conscious dominance, which conscious dominance is actually one of the modules that you teach in
I
our
do.
conscious sexuality experience training. And so I'd love to just for you to touch on that, what that is. And things that you teach, and for those that are perhaps curious about coming to the training, what they learn, and we'll do a deeper episode on this, but just to touch on this for now.
Sure. Well, I guess it's all the elements of what we've discussed. So for it to be conscious, first of all, we need an intent. We need an actual reason for why we are going through this process. So we need an intent, we need a reason, and as you identified, I guess that's what takes it away from just a friction-based experience to an actual something we're doing with an intent and a reason and a plan and a container. So creating a safe container with a beginning and an end and aftercare, that's what conscious dominance is about. So in the training, we actually teach the women how to put together an actual session that involves an onboarding where we talk about intention, how to set intention, how to prepare someone so that when they arrive your session, they're already in a relaxed muscle body. Because if someone arrives tense, they're going to find it a lot more difficult to actually surrender into their body. So we teach them how to prepare a custom before they even walk in the door. And then we teach them about some things they can do to create a situation at the start. So how they can do eyes gazing, how they can ground their customer in their senses. And also I teach them how to be scanning someone's body all the time, looking for areas of muscle tightening, looking for little areas where their customer might be experiencing some distress. And we also teach them how to do that to themselves, because when you're the practitioner, you also have to be aware of your own body, and you have to have that ability to constantly scan your own body and check that you're not tightening your jaw or showing areas where you're. So we teach, as part of conscious dominance, we also teach the women how to scan their own bodies, how to scan the customers' bodies. And then, and this is really fun, we teach them what are some of the archetypes that are involved in dominating. And we give them an opportunity to get in and explore them. And then we'll show them how to integrate all of them into a session, how we might use them. And we do some live demos, which is very fun and exciting and full of surprises. I do teach a few practical skills. So we do some whipping and some cropping. But a lot of what I teach them in a conscious domination session is more about power dynamics and energy and really owning your own power. So I guess that's what we touch on. And then just to show people that it's not all about pain, we also do some sensual domination where we take someone and we take away and add back their senses. So we might take away their sight or their hearing, but then add some sensory touch and take those things backwards and forwards. So you're really giving your customer a sensory experience, but by God, you're still in control and they are still doing what they're told, or they may be tied up, or you're just creating through your own power a situation where they know it's best for them to just lie quietly and relax and experience. So we really teach the ladies in the training how to hold that power, and we do some live demos to really facilitate with teach them how all that goes together, because sometimes it's easy to have a lot of knowledge, but it's still hard to know, okay, how do I put that together in a session? Whether it they want to just put it together in a session that they do in their private life or in a commercial way, we basically teach them how to put it into a package so they could actually do a session with someone. And I believe quite a few of the ladies that did our last training have actually done sessions, whether it be in their personal or commercial life, that have gone very well.
Ah, man, I'm just like, oh, this work is so great. I feel like I just love that I get to be there and do this and and go deeper each time. So it's so great. I love receiving, and like even though we're co-facilitating, I love that I get to receive and I get to go deeper in this part of the training. And that's filtering out to my personal life and my own experiences. And I'm like, so I'm getting to be a participant in those things. Which is really cool. And then I get to see what the ripple effect of that in my own personal life and what's possible for the other participants. So freaking cool. I mean, I've done sensual domination and I've worked and when I was doing Tantra, I was doing sensual domination sessions. And I love the sensory, but just embodying more of those dominant archetypes and exploring different ways of different dynamics has been really powerful. So I love it. I'm just like, ah, it's so good. So good. So we're going to complete here and we're going to continue this conversation. I feel like this is going to be a part one of because there's so much more here I have to share, but just like we're at time. So we're going to come back and actually we're changing up the so for those listening, just want you to know that we're actually changing up the podcast. And it's going to be in a lot more podcasts. And I find that it's a lot easier for me to do a podcast when there's someone that I'm talking with rather than just sitting here like, Oh, I'm talking to people out there that I like and that I can't see. It's so great just having this dynamic of back and forth, and I'm so excited to be having you on. And so I'd love to hear from anyone, like we'd love to hear from you, what you loved about this podcast episode, anything you're curious about. If you are interested in getting and coming to one of our trainings, you go to consciousexualityexperience.com or at consciousexualitytraining on Instagram. You can message us there. And we are also opening up a mixed gender training as well. So at the moment it's woman only. So we're going to open that up so others can attend. That's going to create really, different dynamics. It's definitely a different dynamic when you do have a mixed gender space. And I'm really excited for that. And already have a waiting list for that, which is epic. And as I mentioned, we are also going to be creating an online version for all those people that can't make it to Australia. We are eventually going to take this training overseas as well. We've got requests in Europe and Canada and US, and we've got this people wanting us to do this all over the world, which is super exciting. So if there's somewhere you want us to come, message us and we'll put it on our list for places that to go to. And then we also do have the luxury retreat we're offering for women that are in leadership positions, that really want to be around other women that are like really thriving in their life and want to explore more of their sexuality. Because I do know that in talking to some of these women, they might not feel so comfortable going to a training, but really love the idea of like a luxury, a few days, rather than a full week, 5 to 7 day training. So we are excited to be bringing that, and excited to be create different ways of being able to work with us. And of course, we also work one-on-one, both of us. So again, just message us through Conscious Sexuality Training on Instagram, and we'd love to support you if any of this really resonates for you. Thank you so much, Anna. It's been so great. Oh, so good. Learned so
Thank
much.
you. That was fun.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Deep Sexy Play. If you're ready to get sexy, then I have a playbook full of intimate questions, sexy games, and deep connection practices, which you can get at deepsexyplay.com. If this episode stimulated your mind, I invite you to like and follow the podcast. And if you're feeling extra sexy or got something out of this episode, then I would love to receive and read your review. To connect with me and my listeners, you're welcome to join my free, private, Deep Sexy Play Facebook group. You can also follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at EJLoveOfficial, where you'll also find my latest offerings and ways to work with me. All these links are in the show notes. I hope you'll be back for more Deep Sexy Play.